politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew all the issues that matter in the way they matter at the time they matter. That is our tall order here at Sierra Podcast. Today, for Tuesday, April 9th, this is your host, Daniel Horowitz, back here today. And we're not going to focus on every issue today, but certainly two of the biggest ones, if not the biggest ones, inflation and invasion. Okay? I mean, these are the things that touch on the core of life, liberty, property, civilization, our future, our ability to function and find any corner of this land to live out our lives in somewhat of the way our parents and grandparents lived. Okay, that's really what is at stake. So we're going to go through, I want to go through the economy, sort of where we are, jobs, inflation, venture socialism, and then if we have time, get to some of the latest news on immigration, but all through the prism of the fact that we need forward-looking, imminent, urgent ideas, policy entrepreneurship in the red states to evacuate ourselves from the situation we are already in. And the operative point is that last clause, the situation we're already in. What I think my colleagues don't understand, just because they're operating off of muscle memory like a hamster on a wheel, and this is, you know, those that aren't full-time grifters, those that are just, you know, if you want to ascribe some sort of intellectual thought process to what they're doing, I think it's this, that they're so used to this mannerism that they picked up, you know, maybe especially the ones that were doing this for a while, since the 90s, since the early 2000s. Every 2 years, we reset the country as if we're about to die. We're going to lose our country, lose our culture, lose our demographics, lose our prosperity, our economy, our life, liberty, property, unless you vote Republican. Whatever the top line flavor Republican is of that day, in a general election, first Tuesday, after the first Monday in November, and if you do, we'll be great. If you don't, we'll die. And it's the most important election of our lifetime. And then what happens is, well, inevitably, over the last number of times we've said that, you know, the last generation or two, well, inevitably, the Democrats won at least half the elections. And when Republicans won the other half, they did the same thing. And often, they were able to accelerate it even further, because there was no backstop, because they joined together as a uniparty, but we had no backstop. So at some point long ago, we reached the point of no return. And, you know, let's just start economically. It's not a matter of, oh my gosh, the Democrats are going to implement socialism if they win. We already have socialism. It was creeping for a long time. It really accelerated under the banking crisis and the Obama era fiscal policies enacted in the wake of the Great Recession, and then it's cemented in the permanent Great Reset of COVID fascism that we're in today, that we have a centrally planned venture socialist economy that is completely fake from head to toe. And unless you find a way to get into that sort of top 1%, you have no way to succeed. Kind of the way Bernie Sanders diagnosed the problem for many years, except he was part of it, because it was the government interventions that created that. You know, we just want a fair shake. These guys want to give welfare to everyone and then have the top 1% do their thing and basically turn it into a third world country. That's what we're in. It's not like it's going to happen. We're in this by a mile. The debt, inflation, lethargic job market, which we're going to get into, we're into that by a mile. So we need ingenuity to get ourselves out of it. Okay? And that's something that, you know, it takes a lot of work. You can't sleep for 40 years politically and then want to sleep another 40 years. So the point is, and again, this is before we even get into Trump and his capricious nature, and he doesn't really share our values, and he, you know, is controlled opposition. Even if you had your best leader, DeSantis, times 10, I would still fundamentally believe that we are too late. You're not going to prevent this. We're already in it. And the problem at the federal level, just the Federal Reserve alone, and the policies, the fiscal policies, and their cascading effects, you know, first and foremost, really, healthcare is on autopilot, that we have a permanently sick economy that's unaffordable and basically ensures that anyone who works hard, upward mobility is out of his reach. We've never had that post-World War II, but that's the economy we're living in. I don't think there's anything you can do that realistically, with any amount of political power, that's achievable for Republicans or even a revitalized party to obtain could do that. It's going to have to be done in the states where people like us already are the majority among the populace, and we just have to exert ourselves over the political system. So, you know, I want to get into what this imperative by going through where the economy is. Inflation and invasion are really the two things that, if we don't immediately think of innovative ways to evacuate ourselves from the economic and demographic morass at a federal level, at a national level, we're done anyway. We're done by a mile. But let's just first stipulate what we should not be doing. And that is sitting by, doing nothing, being completely distracted, other than it's all November 5th. You know, Trump put out an ad on True Social yesterday picking up on the, you know, the solar eclipse. And it was called the most important moment in history, overlaying footage from the eclipse. You know, as if to say this is the most, you know, spectacular moment, and the eclipse was really November 5th, and that's the most important moment in history. Folks, again, I'm not telling you not to vote. I'm not telling you not to vote for Trump. Vote for him all you want. I'm just telling you that this is actually the least important election of our lifetime. If we do the things we need to do at a state level, we will have some sort of hope, some sort of refuge. If we don't do it, we're screwed no matter what. Whether Trump wins or not, whether he executes at the, you know, higher level of the, you know, likelihood of him doing good stuff or the lower level, it doesn't matter. Just doesn't matter. That mentality is nonsense. Just sit by, and it all depends on that. And again, a lot of that is largely out of our hands. Whereas if you are in a South Carolina, you're in an Oklahoma, you're in a Texas, you're in an Idaho, Wyoming, Dakotas, Alabama, Tennessee, Missouri. There is so much you can do to organize. And again, go to connection.network. We have teams up in most of those aforementioned states. There's a lot you can be doing. And particularly, we're going to talk, you know, immigration is simple. Economy is very complicated. You need really innovative ideas. How do you evacuate states from the economy? But one, our bigger idea is obviously the currency bills I want to talk about. But folks, it's just not going to change on its own. Okay? That's a reality. It will not change on its own by sleeping through primaries, sleeping through legislative sessions, sleeping through strategic opportunities in the news cycle to utilize certain strategies and elevate certain issues based on those news cycles to push in your, you know, county and state governments our ideas. I know that doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, and I know it doesn't sound really cool, and I know it's hard, but that's life. There is no easy way around this that you could just press a button. Now, I've been trying to think of innovative ways how, you know, we could think of one or two legal changes for each big issue that's as force multiplying as we could possibly get. But in general, there's no silver bullet. And even to do those things, you have to pay attention more, you have to elect better people in primaries, and focus on your state affairs. But everything is designed to just paralyze ourselves with distractions and laziness and just sit around and wait for November 5th like you're just passively watching a solar eclipse. But as I noted yesterday, the proper metaphor with the solar eclipse is that it's eclipsing what should be done. The aforementioned strategies I talked about, that's the sun. The moon, this mooning, is this just utter distraction of just do nothing but vote for whatever piece of crap the Republican Party spits out at the top of the ticket once every 4 years in November. You know, it was always that way. There's nothing new about this mentality. It's amazing how people think that there's something new about the Trump era. It's just as time goes on, because we don't do what we're supposed to do, and we say it all depends on the election, and then the Democrats win anyway, whether they win officially or Republicans win the ballot, but they win the policies thereafter, they wind up winning. So you can't go for 20 cycles in a row and say, oh my gosh, we're going to die if the Dems win, and then the Dems wind up winning, but then somehow it gets reset. No. I mean, we have lost control of our economy completely. We have a permanent, sick, managed economy that is designed so that a middle-class family cannot live with dignity without government support just for basic functions of life. This is not transitory. It's not an aberration. This is a new normal. The question is how much more expensive and scarce things get relative to the quality and pay of jobs for you to earn income. But either way, we're underwater. So I want to give you some analysis on the jobs and inflation market. And then again, if we have time, we'll get to immigration stuff. First, our sponsor today is our friends at Policy Genius. You know, before inflation in the life insurance market takes root, now is the time to shop around. And I have shopped around with Policy Genius by going to policygenius.com. They are not an insurance company, so they make their money not working for them, but working for you by spitting back apples to apples comparison of what you're looking for, the price point based on the amount of coverage. Most people do not get enough coverage from their work. And look, it's hard. It's hard shelling out money for something that you don't see benefit. I just had my annual premiums up and, you know, I paid and I was thinking for a fleeting thought, man, do I have to do this? But look, it's irresponsible. We have more people dying young than ever. Cancer is out of control. Life expectancy is going backwards. And if you have a family like mine where you're the primary breadwinner and, you know, got four kids, a wife, I certainly, you know, needed to shop around at policygenius.com. And when you go to Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year. That's not per month. And that's for $1 million in coverage, which you'll often need if you have, you know, a few kids. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius also has licensed award-winning agents who can help find the best fit for you. So it's not just some random website. You could speak to a real individual. And again, they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over the other. They make their coin by aggregating for you, and that's why they have thousands of five-star reviews on Google and Trustpilot. So save time and money and provide for your family at the same time by heading over to policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com. So folks, as I mentioned, we already have socialism to the nth degree, venture socialism, where, you know, you have the veneer of a private sector, but government essentially funds everything, but it's a two-for-one. Government manipulates the private economy. Healthcare is the top one. It's the largest sector of the economy. It's the most controlled by government, but most things on down. They created mergers and consolidations, all influenced by government, to create endless monopolies, degrade obviously the quality of products increase the price, all the while going trillions into debt to do so, thereby inducing a private credit crisis and debt crisis, because then people are in debt because they can't afford the products that are so expensive because of the debt-driven inflation. And if we don't actively do something, we're screwed. You know what I'm saying? We're no longer one tax cut bill away from pro-growth nirvana. Okay, I mean, this is well beyond the tax system. In fact, the tax system, as much as we don't like it, is the least of our problems. And like I said, there is no readily available, I'm just going to tell you, there is no readily available political solution, even if DeSantis were to win, become president tomorrow. The ability to get enough political power to be able to make the changes you need to the programs, the government agencies, and the just the cost of it, and thereby bend the debt curve. You know, you could nibble around certain regulations of energy here and there. Obviously, if you had a good president, you know, Trump would definitely try to do that. There's no question on energy. That's universal among Republicans, but still, it's not enough. That alone is not, energy is not going to save us. We have a job market, a product market that is completely manipulated and monopolized by government and its sponsored actors. And that's why I'm going to say until I'm blue in the face, having states gradually make gold and silver legal tender, but not just say, oh, thou shalt be legal tender, practically it won't help, but to find innovative ways of gradually introducing it into the market within the states. That is the only one force multiplying economic strategy, fiscal strategy, that is technically within our ability to pass, that will take the entire game out of the federal government. It will collapse their venture socialism. So again, you have these currency bills to make gold and silver legal tender, and that's fine. Louisiana just passed Senate Bill 232 to do exactly that. Passed unanimously. So they're now they're on their way to becoming, what is it, the fifth state? You have Utah, Wyoming, Arkansas, and Oklahoma already did that. But again, you need more because practically, okay, well, you could, but where do people get the gold from? So that's why we need more bills like Iowa, Senate File 2108. Fortunately, didn't go anywhere this session. My friend Kevin Allens, we had him on the show. He introduced it. It will direct the state treasurer to create gold-backed savings and checking accounts where consumers can pay vendors with debit cards in dollars but have the account backed by gold. That is the best way of actually transitioning the economy to gold. And that's where we need to get. We also need bills to get the state to start investing as much of its funding in gold and silver as practically possible. By the way, yesterday we had both chambers in Idaho did pass Senate Bill 1314, which allowed for Idaho to invest in gold and silver, to acquire gold and silver for certain state reserve funds. And Governor Brad Little, Chicken Little, he vetoed it. So again, we're getting there, but you see, to the extent we're failing, it's because we have failed to focus on the primaries when people like me did. But these are the sort of things we need to be pushing because we are totally screwed economically. And just before I run down where we are economically in this country, why we have no choice. Again, we're facing demographic extermination. What I mean by that is the shocking degree of security threats and cultural problems we're bringing in that we have already brought in. If we don't get them out, we're screwed. And we need states to get them out. And parallel to that is the economy. Unless we completely take the currency back, we have no ability to evacuate ourselves from not, oh, the Democrats want to institute socialism. We have the worst form of socialism, by the way, venture socialism, because you have the greed of the private sector mixed in, but government manipulation that protects them from the inherent checks and balances of a healthy and free, you know, free market. So I'll get that, but I just want to say, just an observation before I forget, a little bit off point, but kind of on point. I'm watching the conservative chattering class, talk show hosts, writers, Trump himself. There is one state legislative issue that they're obsessed with. Finally, they found a legislative session in a red state they're interested in. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's actually for the one thing they care about. The general election, presidential election. That's what it's all about. So in Nebraska, basically Nebraska splits their vote by congressional district. So now, thanks to Republicans being toxic among suburban voters, they've been recently losing the Omaha-based district. But, you know, they win handily statewide. So they're obsessed about getting the legislature to change the law on that to start awarding, like every other state except for Maine, statewide. Awarding the all electoral votes, winner take all, based on who wins the state. And again, I'm all for that, you know. Guess you a guaranteed one extra electoral vote. I'm all for doing it. Go do it. I think that, you know, they're claiming because it's possible you get a scenario where, you know, basically if you look at, you go back the last number of cycles, if Trump were to win the states that typically we've been winning but had trouble, you know, Georgia and Arizona, you wind up holding Georgia and Arizona, but you don't, you know, win Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And then you'd have to see, here's the rub. You'd have to say Trump wins Nevada, but then loses the Omaha-based Nebraska district, but then wins the Maine, because Maine splits it, the northern Maine, more conservative district. You put that all together. I don't really see that as likely, but, you know, people think it is. I think it's extremely unlikely, because I think in a scenario where Trump does win Nevada and that district in Maine, I think likely, you know, you will be winning, you know, maybe Wisconsin of those. But, you know, I understand that. Whatever it is what it is. But you could wind up with a 269 split. Whereas if you split the Nebraska district, that will give Biden 270 outright, even if Trump wins the district in Maine. Now, I would be floored if we did that and the Democrats didn't retaliate in Maine and change the law there, and then that would make it moot. But whatever, that's fine. I'm all for it. But it's just interesting that this is the one thing. I'm like, wow, we now have national writers and Trump focusing on a state legislative issue. We sure could have used this with these governor vetoes on these important bills, on immigration enforcement, on currency bills, on medical freedom. But it is what it is. Again, I'm just trying to say we have a movement when we want to have a movement, meaning when the movement services the industry item. I'm not saying it's a bad thing here. I'm just saying it's all an industry. So it has to coincide with the bread and butter of the industry, and that all revolves around one thing. The likelihood of winning of the top of the ticket Republican winning the presidential election. That's all that matters. Okay? It's just kind of dumb. But instead, we need to focus on ideas of how to evacuate ourselves from this economy, because we are screwed. I mean, those of you that have kids that are turning 18, 20, 22, 24, you know, and we're saying, let's get married young, which you should, have kids. I don't know how you afford to live and find enough availability of jobs that will pay enough to afford that living. So I want to go through a bunch of information on that to arm you guys with the facts on the fake economic numbers and the economy we're truly facing. First, our other sponsor today is in-house Blaze Specials. We told you that at the Blaze, we are going to do deep dives into various issues. Our next one is very interesting, bought and paid for, how politicians get filthy rich. You know, it used to be, before the economy became the way it was, you know, senators got paid a lot of money, but now it's nothing in this economy, so they're not getting rich off of their salary. Well, where do they get rich? How is it they walk in, a lot of them are pretty modest, and then come out, you know, multimillionaires? Turns out it's easier than that. All you have to do is just get elected to Congress, and, you know, it's all one big pay for play. So join us this Wednesday. Okay, so that's tomorrow at 8 p.m. for a live pre-show event with Glenn Beck. And then right after that, it's followed by a live premiere of Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, streaming live on YouTube and Blaze TV. So subscribers can watch on Blaze TV. But if you're not, I mean, you should subscribe. But if you're not a subscriber, it's free. You go to youtube.com/@BlazeTV. youtube.com/@BlazeTV to watch live. Make sure to see it. It is going to be very, very eye-opening. Again, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich. Now, speaking of which, again, we have an economy that has basically made America like Mexico, like a third world country, where you have a governing class that tilts the entire playing field towards them, all the while using class warfare rhetoric to create a welfare state, and then suck more people into it because they can't afford hard work and to work on their own volition. So they have no choice but, you know, like healthcare, if you don't get it from a job, you can't afford it anymore because they made it that way. And then that's what you are, just basically, you know, dependent on government for the rest of your life. And they need that because what they cannot have is a class of upper middle income, you know, small business owners that are a bulwark against them. So the COVID economy did this. Now, you might be wondering, you see a lot of different statistics thrown around. And on paper, I mean, in the real world, this is the worst economy ever. I mean, this is the worst economy ever. I could tell you with advertisers on this show, I've lost a bunch because they just couldn't afford. The inflation is nuts. It's out of control. I mean, literally, if you had a certain salary before and you're not earning another $50,000, you're screwed. We've never faced something like this. Yet you look at all the numbers and it's like, yeah, 3% GDP growth, 3.5% GDP growth. One quarter last year, they even said 5.2%. And then the jobs numbers. You now have less than 4% unemployment for something like 38 consecutive months. We've only had this one other time in history in the 60s, the booming 60s. How is that? Now, to the extent this stuff is not fabricated, which some of it is, if you peek into it, it actually foreshadows a worse economy than even having 6-7%, you know, unemployment, because that's normal. And you had a normal economy, you go through a downturn, and then you come up. We are permanently in a state where the leading economic indicators won't indicate a recession, but it's permanently worse than a recession. So let's start with the jobs and then go to inflation. So Biden has been boasting about, you might have heard it, he said it at his State of the Union address, that he created 15 million new jobs since taking office in January 2021. And, you know, a lot of you might be wondering, like, okay, I know that's a lie, but how is it a lie? The reality is, if you peek into the math, it turns out that the entirety of the job growth since Biden took office, really since COVID and to a certain extent, even under Trump for part of this, not all of this, all of the jobs in this new economy have been one of the following categories: government jobs, government-influenced or paid-for jobs in the so-called private sector that aren't really private, part-time, multiple job holders getting an additional part-time job just to pay for the current standard of living, and or all foreign-born residents. In other words, for native-born citizens, the job market has actually been in a recession for quite some time. Now, I did this analysis through February. Okay, so comparing, you know, through February, but since then, the job numbers have come out in March. So I'm just going to first give you the March job numbers, and then we'll go backwards, you know, the analysis from the last 2 years or 3 years since COVID. So just so you know, the establishment survey, right? So there's two different surveys. The establishment survey asks employees or employers, you know, who's employed? How many people, how many jobs do you have? It asks industries. The household survey is like a census of people. Are you employed? So they're different measures. They have different, each one has different data points that the other one doesn't have. So you have to mix and match, and they don't jive. They've never jived completely, but increasingly, more than ever in history, they're way off. Meaning the establishment survey shows many more jobs being created than when you actually poll households, which tells you a lot of things. One of them is because the establishment survey picks up illegal alien jobs, which of which there are many, as we're going to see. And, you know, where, you know, as households won't pick up a lot of illegal households, you know, the census data. So Biden likes to use the establishment survey numbers a lot, which are, you know, a lot more. But anyway, so this past month, 303,000 new jobs, according to the establishment survey. That sounds great. Well, 23% were government. Okay, that's a big share, increasingly more than ever. 27% was healthcare. Healthcare is fake. It's all funding stuff that the government created with this entire insurance system. You know, I don't have time to get into it today, but there's a whole scandal out. There's a new study that came out that found that most cancer drugs that get expedited approval, they don't work. It's making the rounds. I think it's published in JAMA. All of this stuff is enabled by government. This entire industry is built on a lie, and we learned that under COVID. But it has its roots in the way we pay for it with the entire Medicare, Medicaid, employer-sponsored tax exclusion and all that stuff, Obamacare. You put that all together, we already have socialism. So those are fake jobs, most of them. And then 13% was construction, which might sound good, but when you peek into it, about 80-85% is government. So a good number of them are green energy. I'm talking about a massive, massive number. EV stuff shows up all over that. That's what you don't realize. It's all fake. And that's why you don't feel it. Over the last 12 months, the foreign-born have gained 2.6 million jobs. Native-born have lost 997,000, almost a million. Okay, you could take that to the bank if you want to use these numbers straight from BLS. You add, you know, month-to-month numbers from the last 12 months, almost a million. So this is it's a straight-up recession. It's not a nuanced recession. It's a straight-up labor market recession. It's a joke. It's a complete joke. And by the way, you see this, and look, some of it is cultural. Just, you know, it's the welfare, it's the laziness, it's the, you know, all the disabilities, the ADHD, the mental problems. I mean, who knows what 18 to 24-year-olds have nowadays. But certainly what we don't have is when you would have 3.8% unemployment in the 1960s, it looks very different. And again, a lot of that is people dropping out of the labor market. This is from the Deseret News. An increasing number of young adults age 18 to 24 are not working and have no income, according to a recent study. The research by the St. Louis Federal Reserve's Institute for Economic Equity found that more than 1 in 3 young adults have no income. 1 in 3. In 1990, it was 1 in 5, 18 to 24. Now it's 1 in 3. So again, you know, when you talk about, unemployment is at 3.8%, well, it means something very different than it meant in 1990, because you have an insane amount of people that are no longer, they're not in the labor market. They're not, in other words, the unemployment number is what percentage of people that who are looking for a job are in the job hunt don't have one. We're underemployed, unemployed, the U3 number, the U6 number, but the point is that they're looking for a job. We have at the front end now the slackers, you know, Gen Z, and then we have at the back end, and some of this is COVID and the vaccines. Some of it was a long-term trend. You all saw the disability numbers, people retiring in their 50s or even earlier. And that whole, we lost several million at that end. So the government has this fake number now of GDP and you know, joblessness. But anyway, let's go through this. Let's go through the numbers. Let's start with the top line, 15 million jobs created. So when COVID hit back in March 2020, the lockdowns distorted every data point like we've never seen before, because you had suddenly everyone's out of work, and then you know a couple months later they went back. It took well over a year to come back from the lockdowns and merely get back to the pre-COVID baseline. So just so you understand, before we get into the quality of the jobs, that actually no new jobs have been created, and the little that has been created, A, doesn't keep up with the population growth, B, is part-time, C, is government or government influence, and D, is foreign-born. But just the top line itself is I mean, maybe it's not a lie, but it really is a lie, because Biden took office 9 to 10 months after the lockdowns began. So that was like right at the dip, and right as it was coming, you know, when it was coming back. So he's like, oh, the jobs were created. Like for example, if you remember quarter two of 2020, we lost something like, you know, typically you have, you know, you gain 2% GDP, 2.5%. If it's a bad month, it's 1%, 0.5%. If it's a recession, it's you go down 1, 2, 3%. We lost 35% of GDP, but then it, you know, okay, then we gained 35%, right? So imagine you take off as you're like, oh my gosh, GDP grew 35%, right? So that's the equivalent with the job market. So in order to give an accurate picture, you have to look at how many people have jobs today relative to February 2020. Okay, it's not fair to compare from the lockdowns. That's a once in a lifetime thing that you can't use. It distorts the whole thing, right? That's a fair comparison. That as the country, the population is always growing, so you need more jobs. You should measure the job growth since February 2020. On that account, rather than 15 million new jobs, it's just 5.5 million over the pre-COVID baseline, according to the establishment survey. And again, what I think is more accurate, just 2.3 million, according to the household survey. But fine, let's go with the more impressive figure of 5.5 million. Again, you could Google this, Philadelphia Fed establishment survey jobs numbers overstated. Okay, the Philadelphia Fed says blatantly the establishment survey is overstated. But 5.5 million. Now, he's lying. He inflated his thing by two-thirds, or is extremely misleading. But, okay, it still sounds somewhat impressive, 5.5 million new jobs. Yeah, but here's the deal. The civilian non-institutional population of working-age residents of the United States grew by 8.1 million over that same period of time. So, in fact, and again, this is before we get into the quality of what those jobs really are and who they're going to, job growth has not kept pace with the population growth, and that's especially according to the household survey. So again, working age population grew by 8.1 million, and we only got 5.5 million jobs according to the establishment survey, and 2.3 million, according to the household survey. And that's why the civilian labor force participation rate is down. Okay? From 63.3% right before lockdowns to 62.5% today. The labor force participation rate is down because the population's greater and there's fewer jobs. Indeed, when factoring in population growth, there are actually an additional 729,000 unemployed individuals today. I want you to keep that in mind, that you have to look at the top line of how many are employed or unemployed relative to the population. So in raw numbers, there are 730,000 more people unemployed today than February 2020. Put another way, before COVID, 611 of every 1,000 Americans of employment age were working. 611. Today, it's just 601. So again, we have contracted. Before we even get to any cuteness here, okay? Top line, because again, population is always growing. You can't just, X number of jobs are created. Okay, but it has to outpace the population in order to be rendered as growth. There are an additional 5 million people no longer in the labor force of employment age relative to February 2020. Okay? That is the sort of economy we're living in. A permanent recession when you don't even know it is a recession. I mean, the average person feels it, but you know what I mean. The government doesn't admit it. If you contrast that to the same period under Trump, you'll see what I mean. So we're comparing a 37-month window, right? 3 years and 1 month. And 1 month. January 2021. So let's take, again, we now have 38 months of data, but I tabulated with 37. From January 2021 through February 2024. And the reason why I like using that, because that's a perfect thing of Trump's record from January 2017 to February 2020. In other words, once we start going here on out, you can't use the same comparison because then you're getting into COVID. So pre-COVID, you have an apples-to-apples 37-month comparison. Okay? During that 37-month period, okay? During that 37-month period, the population grew by 5.6 million, but 6.7 million new jobs were created. So that's at least some degree of job growth. Now, again, even then, if you take in the foreign-born among the natives, it didn't really grow much. But, okay. But technically, that means job growth outpaced population growth by 20%. Under Biden, population growth outpaced job growth by 47%, according to the establishment survey, and 252%, according to the household survey. So, straight up, if you take the population growth, the amount of jobs today relative to pre-COVID, it's a severe recession. Now it gets a lot worse. What's the nature of these jobs? Okay? In total, 3.4 million part-time jobs have been added since January 2021. With 1.7 million just over the last 9 months. Okay? And that doesn't include March. If you include March, it's about 2 million. So it's really accelerating the last year or so. So right there, that's that eats up the entirety of the household growth. Again, and it's not even growth. It doesn't keep up with the population growth, but I'm saying just in raw numbers, disregarding population growth, or like, I don't know, 60% of the growth in the establishment survey. What this most likely reflects is not a growing economy of profit seekers for upward mobility, but people taking on multiple jobs just to afford the basic standard of living. You know what it's like? You know what the top line job growth numbers are like? It's like an increased white blood count cell level. Oh, wow. I have more blood. Well, yeah, because that means you have cancer. It means you have an illness. So this fueling of part-time job growth is actually a bad sign of an unaffordable economy, and the dead giveaway that the part-time job surge is coming from a sign of weakness is that the number of multiple job holders has surged by 1.6 million to a record level since Biden took office. It's also why the establishment survey shows greater job creation, because it's double counting the increasing number of employed individuals with multiple jobs. That's another thing. It's self-employed with multiple jobs, so it double counts. So that's the dead giveaway, that it's people taking on second jobs just to afford basic living. Also, a lot of the new jobs are self-employed, which, thanks to tax law changes, now includes a number of Uber or Lyft drivers that are now included in that. Full-time employment since last year is down 1.8 million, while part-time growth is up 3.4 million. So again, total jobs aren't even keeping up with population growth. It's a recession. So many people are out of the labor force, given up on working, young and middle-aged. And then all the growth, even that's a net loss relative to the population growth, is part-time. Full-time jobs have slid backwards, not just relative to the population growth, but in absolute terms. Then, of course, so again, you could pie the corner in either way. You could do it part-time, full-time. You could do it government. Okay? The pace of government jobs has doubled the growth of rate of private sector jobs over the last year. Over the past 6 months of job reports, government jobs have comprised from 21 to 58% of job creation, depending on the month. Usually around 30% or so. One month it was as high as 58% of all the jobs that month were government. So it's literally the government printing trillions of dollars and creating phantom jobs while saddling us with the consequences that we then have to take on part-time jobs because we can't afford to live. And that's why, as E.J. Antony from the Heritage Foundation points out, that all the job creation has been concentrated in just 15% of the counties. That's a dead giveaway of government or government manipulated. And again, when I say, you know, 21 to 58% of the last 6 months, that's government directly. Like I noted, the biggest sector in every month is healthcare, and that's completely controlled by government. And then a lot of this stuff is like the green energy jobs. And then there's the final point of native born versus everyone else. Since October 2019, so you go back even a little bit further than COVID, half a year before COVID, since October 2019, native-born U.S. workers have lost 1.4 million jobs. Foreign-born have gained 3 million. In fact, there has not been a month of net job creation for native workers since July 2018. Okay, it's just a reality. Kind of the middle of the Trump administration. That's our economy for us. And that's the jobs. What about affordability? According to Wall Street Journal, a commonly purchased basket of supermarket goods is now 37% more expensive than 4 years ago. And then that doesn't even factor in shrinkflation. By the way, shrinkflation is now affecting housing. I forgot where I saw this, but the average new home is now 100 square feet less than a year ago and 250 square feet less than 2016. So that reverses a long-term trend in the previous decades where houses always got bigger. So keep that in mind. The typical American household, Moody's just put out a report. This is unreal. This is just over the last 12 months from a year. A year ago was already after the big bump in inflation. You have to spend an average of $445 more a month. That's more than $5,000 a year. So if you go back to COVID, it's going to be at least $10,000, $12,000. Who knows what that would be? Because the bigger bump was, you know, in 2022 was the big bump. Total credit card debt is skyrocketing. Savings are crashing. Total revolving credit in the U.S. is now at $1.3 trillion, up from just $960 billion just a few years ago. Savings rate has plummeted to just 3.6%. Interest rates on credit cards are record high, near 25%. And what's causing the personal debt is obviously the government debt. Over the last 12 months, the Treasury issued a cumulative total of $21 trillion of Treasury bills, the most in history. During 2023, the government sold a record $23 trillion worth of Treasuries. Since the end of 2019, the total Treasury market has increased by more than 60% to $27 trillion. It is now six times larger than it was prior to 2008, which was really the beginnings of the venture socialist takeover of our economy. We did not live in a free economy since 2008, and then any vestige of it anywhere was taken out with COVID. Economist Michael Hartnett now estimates that total interest is going to rise, interest on the debt is going to rise to an annualized pace of $1.6 trillion by the end of the year. It will become the single biggest U.S. government outlay by the end of the fiscal year. Meaning, because Social Security is like $1.4 trillion. Global government debt is now at $82 trillion, up $20 trillion since COVID. But in the U.S., it's up by a third. And the U.S. now holds 42% of all global governmental debt. Your government is now issuing as much debt today as during COVID itself. That's what's causing all this. Oh, and by the way, all the while, government employee pay in February rose at the fastest rate of increase in 34 years. It's up 8.1% over the last year. Is your salary up 8.1%? I mean, unless you got a promotion, but in the same job, 8.1% in 1 year. This is what we're funding. They earn more, they get more in benefits, they get more paid leave, and they get salary increases every year. This is what we're funding. And that's what it does. It creates a targeted job market for the people they want. This is from the UK Guardian. The world had gained 141 new billionaires last year. There are more billionaires than ever before. 2,781 of them. They're also collectively worth more than ever, with a combined assets estimate of $14.2 trillion, a $2 trillion increase since 2023, more than the GDP of every country except the US and China. Their collective wealth has risen by 120% over the past decade. And again, unlike the socialists, I don't mind this, but this is not free market that's doing this. It's all venture socialism. First of all, this is the message that if we didn't have the distractions and the personal baggage, we'd be allowed to run an election on. Literally, the presentation I just gave over. But moreover, this is not funny. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do. I got four kids, and they're now getting to an age where clothing and food is a lot more money. And it's shocking to me. It's like each one needs shirts and pants and this and that. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, when you're little, you don't really think about that much. And now everything costs more. Now kids don't eat much. Now they do. I mean, this is the amount of money you need for a family of six. Tremendous amount. Everything is a fortune. What are we going to do about it? And again, there is one power we have to collapse their house of cards. And that is by gradually moving to gold-backed currency, which we explain how that could be done. This is could be the number one thing, along with, I didn't get to, you know, immigration stuff, but obviously we need, like I said before, legislation to preemptively refuse to recognize the legal status of any illegal that Biden grants amnesty to, and to declare a public health emergency, and dare the courts to say, well, you allowed me to lock down Americans. Why can't I have a travel ban on foreigners? We're now up to like 60 tuberculosis cases in Chicago's migrant center. This is the focus we need. We need real solutions. Again, there's a lot of amazing data points and talking points in my presentation here that we could use to own the libs and Biden inflation and Biden this. But let's remember, you know, it really was with the financial crisis that was bipartisan support in 2008, and then COVID that had bipartisan support. Every catalyzing event that got us here was bipartisan support. So this notion that, oh my gosh, we can't allow the Democrats to win, they win either way. The question is, are we finally going to do something different, have a different focus on a different landscape, a different playing field, different states, focus more on the primaries, focus more on the legislative sessions, focus more on ideas that will actually solve the problems we claim. See, I believe we can't survive like this. I actually do believe in it. I mean, look, I guess if you're the type that has a lot more listeners than I do, and you earn a million or several million a year, all right, you know, you don't feel that sense of urgency. I, for one, do. I'm right there with you. You know, I pretty much earn the same I've earned, you know, the last decade. And you can imagine I'm a lot poorer a decade later with more kids, older kids, and your salary now worth, you know, 20 to 40% less depending on what you're, you know, trying to purchase. That's where people are at. And no, there aren't a bunch of high-paying jobs for American citizens out there that aren't run by government and monopolized by government. No, a bunch of, you know, nebulous jobs, illegal alien jobs, part-time jobs. We are in a recession from hell. How do we get out of it, folks? So again, I want you to join our team, conaction.network. Join one of our teams. The currency bills are going to be a top item for this coming year to push in these states, no matter who wins the federal election. Also, I need you guys to send this show to everyone you know, whether you agree or disagree with me. You have to admit, it's my own talking points. I don't follow the crowd. I don't do groupthink. I just speak from the heart and the brain as much as I can. And you know what? We need a little bit more of heart and brain working synergistically together. That you have the heart, the outrage, oh my gosh, but then actually do something about it. Because the two go together. If you really care, if you're really pained by something, it's not enough to wing it, to meme it. You actually are going to scrap the bottom, you know, recesses of your brain to find any solution that will evacuate ourselves from this. With God's help, we have that opportunity. We are seeing the budding momentum in red states. Typically, we come up short, but we're growing with the amount of bills we you know, introduce and how far they get. Not, you know, as far enough, but they do. We just need more states doing more good stuff. That is in our power. And know that has nothing to do with what happens with the general election. Again, I'm not even getting involved in that. Vote for Trump. That's fine. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. It's Trump versus Biden. But that is not the only option we have. Maybe on that one ballot at that one day, that's your option. But when it comes to the issues that matter and the way they matter at the time they matter, if you're in a red state, you've got a ton of options. And boy, oh boy, you better use that while we still have a chance Because, folks, if we don't do anything soon, I shudder to think how we're going to live. There's a lot of examples from history when economies became completely socialist, and that's really where we're headed inexorably unless we make an active effort to change the course of history. Till tomorrow, God bless y'all, and thank you for listening.